When you think filmmaking, collaboration doesn't spring to mind. There's the director and the directors in charge, full stop. Not so with the Australian film Ten Canoes. It's a collaborative effort between filmmaker Rolf Dahir and the Aboriginal people of Rimenjining. It's not hyperbole. All decisions in the writing, casting, and filming were made together by consensus. And the first thing that was understood was the film had to be based on a collection of 70-year-old photographs of a goose egg hunt by an anthropologist named Donald Thompson. Steve Paulson spoke with Rolf Dahir about the extraordinary process of making the film Ten Canoes.
This film, Ten Canoes, is very hard to describe. What would you say it's about?
It's an attempt to use the medium of cinema to tell story in both a Western tradition and in a Yolngu tradition. That's the people who live up there, they're called the Yolngu, to synthesize those two traditions.
Once upon a time, in a land far, far away. Nah, not like that. I'm only joking. But I am going to tell you a story. It's not your story. It's my story. A story like you've never seen before. But you want a proper story, huh? Then I must tell you something of my people and my land. Then you can see the story and know it.
Now, I have to say, I have never seen a movie like this. Stylistically, it's absolutely unique. Not only is the pacing and the narrative unusual, but the dialogue is entirely in the Aboriginal language, with the exception of the narrator, who is speaking in English. And then you've also shot some scenes in black and white, one particular time period, the more recent one, and then other scenes from the mythical past in very vivid color. And I find that choice interesting because it suggests that that mythical time is the more real time, because that's the one in color, the one that jumps out at us.
The black and white sequence, the old times, which was the goose egg hunting expedition, it was more closely based on the Thompson photographs than the mythical past section. And we shot it quite formally, and mostly the camera didn't move at all, just images composed as Thompson composed images. And, you know, it was important. The Thompson photographs are very important to them because it's their direct connection with the past. It's the only depicted history they have. The rest is all oral storytelling.
You could almost say that these photographs from the 1930s have a certain sacred quality to them.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really, truly important because everybody's related to people in the photographs as well, and they are profoundly important. And so there's a particularly good sequence of goose egg hunting photographs, and I think it's the reason why they wanted goose egg hunting very much as part of the story. And so it felt to me that we had to honour those photographs for them to feel comfortable with what they were seeing. You know, they had to be... The images that we got had to be like those photographs in a way. And so really they had to be shot in black and white. And to shoot the whole film in black and white would have been a lovely thing to do, you know, it felt at the time. But I was contracted to deliver a colour film. And so, and so the overall solution to everything was to set part of the film, the main part of the story, in the mythical times and shoot that in colour, and then be true to the Thompson photographs of the goose egg hunting in the more, you know, in the old times, in the real old times, have that in black and white, and then everybody's sort of satisfied.
It's fascinating to hear you describe this because you really, I mean, this is so against the grain of how movies are usually made. I mean, you were consulting with the people who live there, and it sounds like you really wanted to honor them and their way of life. And I mean, they were very much active collaborators.
It was a very different way to make a film. I didn't feel I had any right to impose anything. I could guide, I could counsel strongly, But I had to be the means for this to work. They had to feel real ownership of not only the product, but also the process, because they live and feel and function in a very different way. Their universe is a different one than ours is. So I was the means by which they made their film. And I had to be sensitive to that at all levels from the very beginning.
You talk about it as their film. It's not your film. It's their film.
Yes, it's their film.
Even though you're the professional filmmaker.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, the opportunity to do it. Let's say I went to a community and said, this is what I want to do. I want to make a film like this. There's almost no way to carry them with me if that's what I want to do and make a film like this. I mean, apart from anything else, it would have cost 4 or 5 times as much. And I don't think it would have worked because they would simply have got to a point with it and thought, no, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go, you know, and do that, something else. Or there's a funeral on, I'm going to disappear for 3 weeks. They had to feel that it was their film and that they were making it for them to achieve it. And they didn't think they could achieve it. This was like a bigger thing than anything that they'd ever attempted before. And, one of the great and glorious things about it for me was that they achieved so much more than they ever thought they were capable of. And it has forged at least minor change in the community, in the sense that it was a very static community that was just waiting, you know, just sat there and waited in a way. It's now at least in parts a little forward-looking, thinking that things are possible. So they used to collect eggs, crocodile eggs, and send them off to Darwin to a crocodile hatchery. They're now planning their own crocodile farm and believing that they can do it. They started to build a music studio because they think, yes, we can do this. And so that whole process of the film, of the making of the film, which was so necessary, otherwise you would never get it done, has had broader effects than I could have thought.
Was this a challenge for you as a director? I mean, here you are working with a bunch of people who, none of whom have any professional acting experience. They don't even speak English. It sounds like this would be rather difficult.
It was as difficult a thing as I've done, on a physical level as well. The swamp is a difficult place to be.
Lots of crocodiles swimming around there.
Well, I do remember one particular day. I'd been standing in the water up to my waist for around 6 hours, and the leeches were attacking me from the waist down. The mosquitoes were getting me from the waist up. And the blokes, the mob were in the trees where they had to be for the shots, and one of them yelled out, "There's a big one coming," which was a big crocodile. And I'm thinking, what am I doing here? The thing I understood at the beginning is that I needed to call upon reserves of patience such as I'd never had to call on before. And I had a mantra, you know, never get angry, never, never lose your cool. You know, and it's quite difficult because filmmaking is actually very hierarchical, very organized, very schedule driven. And that's all those things are the opposite of culturally who they are. And so in the construct of the making of the film, I designed fail safes so that, for example, okay, we'll have a schedule because we need to have some sort of schedule, but what'll happen is, okay, there'll be, so one morning, nobody will turn up or only 2 people will turn up because there'll be something happening in camp for some reason. Now, if that happens, rather than the stuff that we're meant to be shooting that morning having to be shot at some other time, I'll tell the cinematographer, I'll say, look, go on to the swamp, Jonesy, and get me 2 great shots. I don't care what they are. Just get me 2 great shots. And what we'll do is we'll put those shots in and bridge the missing stuff with the storyteller so that the role of the storyteller, the narrator, but really, you know, the storyteller, would also be, well, okay, it's partly there because that's the tradition and that's, you know, they wanted storytelling in the film, but it also functions as a schedule fail-safe.
I come from a waterhole in this land you longer made. I was looking like a little fish in my water hole. Then my father come near my water hole. I asked him for my mother. I wanted to be born. My father pointed out one of his wives. "That's your mother," he told me. I waited until the right time, and I went just like that into her vagina. Then my father had a dream. That dream made him know she had a little one inside her. That little one was me. When I die, I will go back to my waterhole. I'll be waiting there like a little fish, waiting to be born again.
Rolf de Heer, along with the people of Remingening, directed the film Ten Canoes. Steve Paulson spoke with him.
And they all lived happily ever after. Ha 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 ha!